It takes a village, they say. The fabric of community makes for greater resilience and points toward sustainability. But for the most part, modern cities have not been developed that way. And it's time to start. And how do we do it? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. We're going to get a quick course in co-housing today. Statewide phone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talkatalaskapublic.org. We meet the people of Raven's Roost today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com. And by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, we have, in the lovely city of Anchorage, we have all sorts of different real estate, and we have a kind of a boom and bust history cycle that has left us with the remains of all that, and now we're looking, some are looking towards trying to carve a more sustainable future in our city, and discovering that there are design insufficiencies. So maybe you can just go ahead and design it yourself. If you just have the land and you just go ahead and build yourself a bit of a village there, maybe you're ahead of the game in a lot of different ways. We're going to find out from the Raven's Roost people. Terry Pauls, you're one of the founders of Raven's Roost?
Yes.
And essentially this is, what, 6.5 acres of more or less raw land?
Correct. It's beautiful land.
It's has South Anchorage.
Fabulous drainage on Abbott Road, a half mile from Fred Meyer. And easy biking distance to UMed District. So we have a lot of amenities close by, yet we still have the hillside ski trails a mile away. Mm-hmm. And the land was reasonably priced being in that area.
And as I understand it, the person that homesteaded this land, they really liked this
yes.
experiment.
Yes, Arnie Link and his wife Norma. Arnie was the first person to develop a home site on Abbott Road back in 1948. A wonderful, very interesting man who is going to remain on the site in his own home, lifetime estate, which we were able to offer him, unlike conventional developers. And he's just fabulous, and he's very supportive of this. He thinks that kids would grow up to be much better people if they grew up in the type of friendly neighborhood that we're looking at creating.
So, okay, you got in this 6.5 acres, you're going to have Mr. Link.
Right.
You're going to have, like, whatever grounds he kind of is used to around him, right? Pretty much?
Pretty much. It'll be very similar. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of it is, a lot of it's wooded and so forth right now.
Right.
And you're going to just go in there and leave some woods, right?
Oh, absolutely. We really value green space.
Uh-huh.
That's part of the reason we cluster the homes.
Yeah. But the idea is essentially some families that are going to deliberately co-inhabit to this space, and they're going to own it.
Right. The fundamental.
So it's like a condominium, really.
Yeah. The fundamental key to co-housing is that all the residents moving in intend to get to know each other, but legally it's set up very similar to a condo association, so it's really not all that different from mainstream condos from that legal perspective. All the homes are owned and privately, and then we agree on what common amenities we'd like to share, and then our HOA dues pay for those common amenities.
All right. I guess it's time to introduce Tom here. Tom Pierce Bulger, you're the architect of this venture. Is this something entirely new for you?
This is the first project I've done in co-housing, of course, but I'm familiar with when I was in grad school, in fact. I came across the co-housing book that Chuck and Katie wrote back in the 80s, I believe it was. So that was early 90s, and I was very taken by that concept. And in fact, when I came back to Alaska, I thought, maybe we should try that up here, but I was unable to, I couldn't get it going.
Well, yeah, I mean, first you've got to round up the people, and then the people have to have the money.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those are serious obstacles. So how far along is this venture now?
Well, we've been at it for...
We got a model that's sitting in the studio that only the television audience can see.
Yeah, we're at the point where we're in the design-build phase with a builder. So we're definitely, we've made a lot of progress from last March 22nd, 2012, when we got the contract on the land. So we've come a long ways with a lot of architectural planning with a specialized co-housing architect firm from Massachusetts. They came up here for four different workshops, and they have the skills to take you through all those decision-making processes as a group. You can imagine all the decisions. So that was all last...
No, I can't.
That was all of last summer's work, and then we've created...
Oh, you've been through that.
And we've been through that last summer, yeah. And then we had...
Well, I bet you that was fun. Beyond your normal condo association
meeting
there.
Exactly, yeah. So we had a big kind of gala celebration November 15th of last year to unveil our architectural designs. And then when they were done in September, that architectural firm, then Tom takes over as the local architect to actually... manifest those plans. So then we got unanimous approval from the municipality on January 7th for our conditional use permit for a planned unit development.
And this is how different from the point of view of planning and zoning, how far off code is this?
Oh, it meets all the codes.
It's not off code at all. In fact,
really?
It exceeds the code in many respects.
Mm-hmm.
It's...
But I mean, in terms of like... density, that's cool.
We're actually less density than a conventional developer could do on this land, because again, we value the green space.
Yeah, we could have put 50 homes on that without changing the zoning at all. R1 zoning would have, and we're doing 35. We are clustering the homes close together, and we're able to leave more than an acre and a half of woods undisturbed. But if you average the density, 35 and 6 acres versus 50 and 6 acres.
And that's how planning and zoning does it.
Oh, yeah.
But you're right about the codes. I mean, as far as sustainability, there's a lot that could be done if some of those codes were changed. But you'll find that the young planners who have just gone to grad school now, maybe, in the last 10 years, they know about smart growth. They know about co-housing. The young planners are totally in support of our project, and they wish the codes were a little bit, more fitting to what we're trying to do. For instance... when we had Chuck Durrett up here, Katie's husband, the two of them are the people who brought co-housing from Denmark to the U.S. in the 80s. He said the biggest thing that Anchorage or Alaska could do to create more sustainable housing is to reduce the number of acres required for a PUD. Right now it's 5, which is why we had to buy the 6.3 acres. you need 5 8-hole acres to do a PUD. If you decrease that, you could do much more... of this more sustainable design on smaller
PUD
pieces.
Is a
planned unit development.
Unit development. Okay. Well, maybe it's time to bring in our other guest by telephone from her office in California, Catherine McCammett of Co-Housing Partners. How do you do today?
I'm good. Thanks for having us.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. I'm all excited about this, and... It's wonderful to get to know what's really going on with this. So how long have you and Charles Durrett been involved in this?
Well, for about the last 25 years, we've been involved in co-housing. When we first came across it in Denmark, and that inspired our writing of a book, and we've been creating co-housing communities across North America ever since.
Can you explain to me what the Denmark innovation was?
Well, this basic idea that you could really create a collaborative neighborhood by bringing people together. In essence, what we're doing is creating a custom neighborhood instead of a custom house. And the Danes were inspired by many of the same things as we are, is that, in our modern American suburbs, when, you know, it's a very isolating. And so especially when you're raising kids, all of a sudden you find you're sort of out there doing it on your own. And that it can really be a lot more fun and seems to have a lot of benefits by having a more collaborative neighborhood where kids can aren't tied to play dates all the time and such, and they have
I will have to say in Spinard that they're some of my neighbors I don't want any closer than they are right now. and I think that is probably the most basic challenge is the human dynamics and the cultural implications of all this. And it could, when you go from Europe to the United States, I would think that you're dealing even there with different cultural mentality, and you probably came right up against that pretty quick.
Well, you know, what's interesting is actually, I would say there's way more similarities than there are differences between the cultures. I think really what co-housing taps into is, you know, the way people have lived for hundreds of thousands of years, which is in community. The odd thing is this separate single-family house for really very small households. And that's the sort of unusual thing when you look at the history of human development. So it is not so different. I think in co-housing, people still value their privacy. We work hard to balance people's independence with the desire for a collaborative neighborhood. It's in some ways very much the way the West was won. All groups of people, working together, and it's the way all the small towns of the West, the way Alaska was originally settled, is that people come together in order to create, you know, work together to get through the hardships.
Yeah, but that's a sort of organic process where the structure is a result basically of available materials and the needs and the landscape that the people are dealing with, some of which they have to deal with as a group. Now here instead you're coming in with a design and then kind of fitting the people to it, I would think.
No, actually the design comes out of the people. I mean, that's where this group has been, is working on looking at how do they really want to optimize.
So in other words, the theory then, culturally how it would work, is that the theory is that you meld the people into a unit first.
They sort of
enter into an agreement or a process where they can get on the same page easier that way than sort of people at random, you know, buying into a condo.
Yes and no. I mean, you start with a core group, as we did it, and the Anchorage group started, and a vision about a more collaborative neighborhood than what they've been able to find there already. And then people join into that vision. So people are joining all the time, and it works actually very well for people to move in along the way.
I see.
But it is driven by the people who want to live there, as opposed to a developer and an architect who really have no long-term tie to the community.
Yeah. So I guess then when you get to the site, it even can get down to something. No, that's a special tree there. We shouldn't
exactly
mess with that tree.
Exactly.
And you can all agree about stuff like that. Is that right?
Well, sometimes we create smaller teams, so the whole large group doesn't have to agree on something. But we have already a vision and value statement on our website, ravensroostcohousing.org, and people are free to read that, and it's pretty detailed. And so therefore, in many of our creations of policy, we first get together and talk real broadly about cares and concerns. Then we send it to a small group. So same thing with which tree we're going to save. We'd probably empower a small group of people to make that actual decision.
I see. So you've worked this out. How long, the basic core of people then, how many do you have and how long have you known one another?
Well, we have 10 households, and some of us have known each other for coming up on 2 years, and others of us have really just met in the last month or so because we do have some new recent members.
So that's as like Katie is saying, that it's kind of a not all that difficult a process.
Step on board at any point. Yep,
right.
Up until the last unit sold.
Well, the telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call from Anchorage, which probably some are in the Raven's Roost, I would think. 550-8422. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org, and we're open for business with the phones here on Talk of Alaska. The subject is co-housing, and we've got Katie McCammett of Co-Housing Partners by phone from her office in California. Tom Pierce Bulger, who is the architect here in the studio, and Terry Pauls, one of the participants in Raven's Roost. Seems to me, Terry, this thing come up rather fast.
It did, actually. Our number one burning soul walked into a bookstore and picked up the book that Katie and Chuck wrote and kind of started on fire that this is what she wanted to create. And I heard about it within a couple of weeks, and then we started a small group, and it went from there. We had Chuck and Katie up to offer a workshop that really helped us with the nuts and bolts and got us off on the right step. And ever since we went with Chuck and Katie, we've continued to get really the best consultants we can. So this is a really solid project because we have, you know, one of the top attorneys, a great person working on our HOA docs. We've got a building a contractor that has a great reputation around town, and Katie continues to consult with us on the budget and other things. So we've really taken the high road on having the best consultants that we can.
Katie, how are they doing compared to other groups that you deal with?
They're doing great. You know, I mean, it's a real eye-opener for people to sort of go from wouldn't this be a great idea to being a developer, you know, and how do you put it all together? But they have really, you know, they've got a great group of people and a combination of talents sort of allow them to plug in and really, and a passion. I mean, I think really ultimately that's what drives it, is a passion for creating a different kind of neighborhood.
So the, you know, your condo will tend to have like some kind of common space, and they'll have maybe even a common room that people can have weddings and stuff in, maybe even they get together for dinner, some of them. What other kind of common, I assume you're going to have all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, those.
What
in,
else would you have in common?
In my observation, those clubhouses aren't very often used in terms of the people.
I've noticed that too.
In terms of the people who live there getting to know each other, oftentimes they'll have a private party with their outside friends. But how well do they really know each other? How well do they want to know each other? So in our co-housing, as with most others, we will have a common house that'll be the heart of the community that has a large kitchen and dining area that is adequate for having the whole group come in for optional shared dinners two or three times a week, maybe a Sunday brunch for, you know, maybe dances, events, music nights, talent shows, that type of thing. It'll also have a living or sitting room, a kids' playroom, because the number one thing kids want to play with is each other, and that way all the toys can be shared. A couple of
I like that.
A couple of guest rooms.
I like that.
Yeah.
You know how much money gets
wasted
on toys?
Exactly. Well, you know, co-housing really is about sharing a lot of resources to reduce waste,
you got a really fairly high investment expense to start with up front.
Right.
But you're saying that operating wise.
Well, each of the homes is smaller because they don't all need a kids' playroom. They don't all need a guest room because there are a couple guest rooms in the common house. They don't all need a workshop with a bunch of tools. They don't need their each lawnmower, a snowblower, all that extra stuff. Your living room doesn't need to be that big if you can use the common house when you have a bunch of your family over or whatever.
I'm seeing a problem with the carports right away. I am. I'm seeing because some people like to accumulate.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, we'll have some dry storage area over on the west end of the development.
Yeah, some people like to accumulate vehicles. I've noticed this Alaskan penchant.
And by the way, the carports can be upgraded to garage at the individual's extra cost.
Oh, I see. So it starts as a carport, and if a person wants to put their own bucks into it. All right. So generally speaking, if I, let's say I decided I wanted a boat and motor, I probably couldn't keep it on the property if I was.
Well, you could if, well, we've just, we can choose whatever we want. And at the moment, we've chosen to say that if it fits in a parking space, you can put it there.
Right.
We try to keep the blue tarps to a minimum. But if your boat is on a trailer and fits in there, sure.
If it fits in,
yeah.
If it doesn't, you got to figure something else out.
At the moment, we're. But that's again, we organize ourselves under consensus. And
right.
so if
there's okay, enough... now there's something very different from the condo
yes.
association.
Yeah, absolutely, because there's no them. There aren't these other people on the HOA board who are making decisions that are pretty lousy from what I hear sometimes. Instead, you both empower everyone to take part in the decision. You can't really point fingers because you've all been part of the process. And most importantly, you come up with the most elegant solution because consensus emphasizes listening to everyone. And then consensus doesn't mean unanimity necessarily. It could be. But more likely, it's a decision everyone can live with. And so
anybody that lived through the 60s has been part of organizations that thought that they could govern themselves on a consensus basis.
Did they have formal training? We've had formal training. That's so important. Katie can chime in here.
Jump in here.
Yeah, please do.
I think what you're missing is that there are now co-housing communities across North America that have existed for the last 20 years, and they're thriving. And one of the really interesting things was the last 5 years when we hit this housing bust and a lot of houses went into foreclosure, a lot of neighborhoods all across the country really suffered. But co-housing actually held its value better than other types of housing.
Good point.
And it's because they care more about it. It's not just a house and square footage. It's really, you know, there's an emotional investment. It's a neighborhood they really care about. And the way that people, I think, used to care about small town, you know, the town they grew up in, and now we move around so much that we don't have the same ties. And so this is a way that you can sort of get connected into a place and feel like you're part of something larger. It's not just you and your house, it's you and your neighborhood.
I'm seeing a really interesting demographic challenge here because in Anchorage, first off, the demographics are changing substantially. And I think people may not always realize that, but people that are trying to build, I think, is starting to dawn on them. But one thing that does happen is that the situation with many professions is that you don't honestly know whether you're going to be able to stay here because of how many jobs are available in your profession, that they're, you know, you might not be able to stay here. And this type of situation is quite a commitment. And that's very different from what people in boom towns and bust towns are used to.
Well, I think in some ways it's just exactly the reason. You know, I mean, if all of us lived in the towns our grandparents lived in, you know, as 100 years ago, people did have these sort of ties to their towns because they had been there for generations. Now, you know, we don't have our whole lives to make that build
well,
up I, over time.
I'm just thinking like this, Katie. If I were to muster my resources and buy into something like this, you know, and then all of a sudden discover that... I was washed up in the radio business in Anchorage. Not likely, but still, I would really hate to leave.
Well, it is true. People do often hate to leave. And it's interesting. I see people who have moved, you know, when they do move, they'll look for another co-housing community in the new town.
Oh, wow.
Because they've now said, hey, you know, I can't imagine living any other way now that I've lived that way. So, but I do, you know, so I think people do move, you know, and I think that's one of the things we really make sure that the financial and legal structure is set up so you can buy and sell and, you know, the way that people are used to dealing with homes. It's not a unique financial structure.
I would think a consultant would be very handy for that type of stuff. Yeah, I can see.
Yeah, well, I think that's what I bring to it is 25 years of experience of what works and what doesn't work and lessons learned and all of that. And we have a lot of experience now. I mean, it may be new to Anchorage, but it is no longer new to North America. And we have, I could say, there's about 125 communities built across the country. There's actually quite a few in British Columbia as well.
Okay, now the next thing you're going to tell me is that the co-housing capital of the United States is Portland.
Not yet.
No. Okay, well, where would you start? Someplace in Vermont.
Well, no, actually, here in California and Colorado, there's quite a few. In the Northeast, there's a lot. But they are literally all over the country. You know, out in the middle of the Midwest, there's communities down in Atlanta. And I think it's one of those things that once people visit a co-housing community, they say, oh, well, this isn't so weird. This is actually a really nice place. And so often people will get interested in it because their kid's playing with somebody who lives in a co-housing community, or they're visiting a friend there, and they realize, wow, this is really a great neighborhood. I would love to live in a place like this.
Time for some phone calls. Let's go to Matthew, who joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Matthew.
Hi, thank you. I participated last summer with my wife in a potluck at the Raven's Roost location. We bicycled down there from downtown. It took us about 40, 45 minutes to ride out there. And one of the things we were interested in is something closer into town. And when we talked to folks there, they said, oh, yes, they looked at properties downtown, but it was expensive. And then there's the five-acre land unit development issue. Has anybody that you know of, Terry, in town been working on changing that planned unit development designation?
Not that I know of.
For people to be closer.
I'm unaware of any effort to change that particular requirement.
Well, it just seems like for folks like us anyway, we're really not wanting to be driving if we can help it. And we like the exercise that we get either biking or walking to work.
So it'd be great. If it was on Fish Creek, it'd be fantastic.
Right. Well, yeah. We do have a bus route a half mile away, and we also anticipate it being much easier to carpool because we can always see each other in the parking lot, and it's really easy to get together. So I understand, but we also do have a lot of amenities close by. But if you work downtown, if you're really, like you said, it can be a beautiful bike ride, but it can be a white.
Are there insurance companies that are doing rideshare yet here in Alaska?
I'm not sure.
Because there's your hurdle, These people share their vehicles, yeah, but it's technically not real legal.
Well, actually, I lived for a month at Eco Village Ithaca, and they had
in New York State.
New York State. And
they're very regulated there.
They have a car-sharing program with cars stationed all around Ithaca, and one was stationed at the Eco Village.
And they ironed
out all
the
insurance. I actually signed up for it because I flew out there. I was there for a month. So I thought I'd test it, and I signed up for the whole thing and got to use the car. It was really a neat program.
And the coverage was part of it.
Yes.
Part of the deal. Yeah. It was in the price tag, no doubt. Hey, Matthew, more?
Yeah, I guess I just would like to think about moving forward with changing those policies in the city. And actually, if anybody has any guidance for who to talk to, I'd be interested in being part of that.
Contact us on the website. I could lead you to the receptive folks in the planning department on that.
Great. And thank you all so much.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew. I do think that this is one of these situations where I don't see the planning process of the municipality being conducive to this unless there's demand out there.
Mm-hmm.
As the demand steps forth and goes to P&Z and so forth and says, we want this, we think this would be good, and so forth like that.
Right.
That's when you're going to, it's not real easy to change this institutionally, a lot of this stuff.
Right. And sometimes what happens with co-housing is once one gets built in a town and people can actually see, like Katie was saying, how great
it is.
Then another one gets built and another one gets built. So there may be more pressure, once we're built.
Okay. Well, telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. This one from Stacy. This kind of development is brilliant. It creates a much better sense of community and connectedness that I think modern developments sorely lack. Especially in a place like Alaska, community is vital for individuals, adults, children, and families. Our host seems very skeptical of this community. But this type of housing will create people who truly care about their community, about Anchorage, and about Alaska. Well, got to be the devil's advocate sometimes. I mean, it seems a little more conventional it would be to my taste, actually.
Well, it is actually the most mainstream of what, whole continuum of intentional communities.
Yeah. But so common facilities.
Yes.
What will they have? There's talk of a root cellar.
Right, I wasn't quite done listing the amenities in the common house. Mm-hmm. So again, the large kitchen, dining area, the living room, the kids' playroom. We're looking at two guest rooms right now so that we can
share those spaces.
Yeah. And when they're not being used, it's a great place to practice musical instruments, that type of thing. And then we also do have a laundry room. Now, every unit will have its laundry hookups if you want to use it. But you can also have the option of not having a washer and dryer and doing the laundry in the common house. Upstairs,
Who would pay the utilities when one is enough?
Those are
part of the HOA dues.
So then upstairs we'd be looking at a kind of recreational game type room, as well as a big open space for yoga and movement, that type of thing. And that's probably where our walk-in freezer would go as well. You know how many freezers we, instead of having 35 chest freezers, we thought, how much more efficient would it be to have a big walk-in freezer, you know, for the fish and the moose and whatever people have to store away.
Are you okay with that, Tom?
You bet.
I think it was his idea.
I believe it was.
So that's the common house, but we're also going to have facilities around the rest of the land. So on the west end, there's a building we're going to be remodeling to have a big workshop on the bottom floor, because again, we want a place to do not only woodworking, but waxing skis, doing bike repair. We have a bay where a car can be pulled in to change the tires or the oil. And then we'll have a big bike storage area that Tom's got all designed.
Now, Alaskans are really picky about their tools.
Right.
If you imagine certain things, like a bandsaw, yeah, certain things you can have in there. Other things...
Well, actually, the whole idea around co-housing is to be of a certain size and not to be too big. So it's generally between 20 and 35 households, because if you keep it smaller than 35, it's not anonymous. It's not a public workshop. It's a commons. And where you have a limited number of people, you know, Sherry just used it. Jeff is going to use it next. If I leave a mess, they're going to know it was me. And so people do take much more responsibility in a you know, relatively limited size group.
I'm still nervous about anybody else using my chainsaw. So,
so anyway, there's also going to be a fitness equipment room in this building and some on-site offices that only residents can lease. And then the dry storage I was talking about. And the root cellar over there under that building. Big shared gardens.
And we're talking greenhouse. Food security now.
We're talking food security, yep.
Yeah. How about colossal fuel storage somewhere?
Haven't talked about it. But actually,
yeah, it's all over the bush. Many people are.
We do. We're looking at the more natural route. We're going to have a masonry stove, which is so efficient the EPA doesn't even monitor it. So that if we do have a huge earthquake and lose all power, we just need wood. And it's super efficient. And our buildings are also going to be so energy efficient. I think Tom has estimated 82% more energy efficient than a 5-star rated home. So super efficiency. A 3-bedroom, I'm taking Tom's lines here.
That's okay.
A 3-bedroom.
You've learned them by heart
right,
by now.
A 3-bedroom home in our co-housing, he estimates that at today's gas prices will only take about $9 a month to heat.
That's flabbergasting.
Yeah.
I think on that note, we'll take a break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Across Alaska, AFS USA invites you to open your home and change the world by hosting a high school student sponsored by the U.S. State Department. There's more information online at afsusa.org or 800-AFS-INFO. This message sponsored by the U.S. State Department and AFS USA.
Our subject is co-housing, and this is not just an Anchorage thing. This could happen anywhere. But the fact of the matter is, if you have a village already, you're already some degree towards having a neighborhood as well, as you well know. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. Katie McCammett of Co-Housing Partners is with us by phone. And then a co-housing partner, Terry Pauls, part of the Raven's Roost operation in South Anchorage, and Tom Pierce Bulger, who is the architect of that project, and they're right in the, they pretty well got the thing designed, it sounds like. And when's moving time? Do you know?
Well, we're hoping to move in the winter of 14.
Wow. So groundbreaking should be coming up before long.
Spring of 14.
Mm-hmm.
But the limiting factor right now, of course, is the number of people involved.
Okay.
Financing is a challenge. The more people, the more easier it will be to convince a lending institution that we can do the construction.
So how many units?
35.
35 units. And how many do you think you need? What's your critical mass?
It's real conservative right now, and it looks like 3/4 is our critical mass.
Right. And then, you can actually then leverage the financing, and people could still, there'd be room to buy in after that.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. We do expect to have, you know, homes for sale after we're built.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right, but I do think the earlier people get involved, the more they get help to create the culture, the better selection they have of homes available, and, of course, the better price they get. So all those things are good reasons to get involved now so that you help create the culture of the community.
Well, yeah, I mean, in the minute, like I was cruising the site plan, you know, in the minute you do, your imagination starts working, or we have a little model in here. We can see the atrium concept that the housing opens into the sort of atrium area. And you can see, well, I'd like the one on this side, the one on that side, or the one with the windows up at the top. And
right.
So it goes on like that.
Yeah, if you want your choice, you have to get in early.
Right. There's definitely options involved here. And I guess, Katie, that's always the case, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's fun to watch a community really come together as people, you know, originally people will walk in the room and say, oh, I don't know any of these people, but you build that sense of community over time as you work together, and it's really fun to watch them sort of become their own life.
Well, Helen calls into the show from Bethel with a question. Helen, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to find out how one can get started in this co-housing because there's hardly any housing in our area. And I'm interested in your information about how this co-housing works, and is there an application process to get this going? Could I get one started in this area?
I think it's possible if you went around and talked to you've got your village corporation, you've got your nonprofits, and you find some interest in the nonprofits in this. And I don't know that I don't think agencies are real into this yet, although they might buy in later on. Tell me, Katie, that's maybe a good question for you. To what degree is like HUD or any of those agencies buying into this concept?
Well, you know, they've all gotten really conservative with the economic.
Well, yeah, because of the housing bubble, of course they are.
So we're working with them, but okay. That's a long, slow haul. I think it actually works very well at all different income levels and the different financing mechanisms. But most of the co-housing communities that have been built in the United States are market-rate developments built by people who come together, basically pool their resources to create this neighborhood. And I think it's interesting that the large majority of people living in co-housing moved out of single-family homes. They had the American dream. And they thought there's got to be something better than this.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's an interesting aspect of it. So one of the things we are working on is, you know, how do we take it to different ownership methods and open it up to a broader number of people. But what's driven it so far is people who had choices who were really looking for something more than the single family house.
Well, for the benefit of Helen in Bethel, you would picture a town that would look kind of like a village to you, but is what we call a hub community. So it's largish for a rural community. It's situated on quite flat land in a delta area and strung along a river. And the housing is There's some HUD housing there. There's some single-family housing there. It's pretty much all substandard. And there's a shortage of housing there, as Helen has pointed out. So she wants to know, well, how do I even get started? And I guess the way to get started is research.
Well, yeah, actually, you know, our book is meant exactly for that purpose. So there's a new edition out, Creating Co-Housing, Building Sustainable Communities. And it's 20 years of experience. And so it has lots of photographs and site plans for existing American co-housing communities and information about the wide range of possibilities. So it's a great tool for talking to, you know, your local housing agencies, to neighbors, to others you think you might get interested, because you can get people interacting and asking questions about it. So that's really, I think, a way a lot of communities have gotten started is, you know, get a copy of the book, start talking around with people, and out of that, form a group to move forward with it.
And also Helen can contact us at Raven's Roost, because we have the Alaska perspective. I mean, we've done a lot of that research, and she can short circuit some of that, not to say...
Okay, so what's the contact? Who wants to leave a contact?
Well,
for
website, ravensroostcoho.org.
Yeah, it's got your phone number right
on it.
But
yes. It also has a lot of the really basic information, links to a couple of videos about co-housing. There's a national association, cohousing.org, that we link to that also has a lot of general information.
Okay, so that's a start, Helen.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for calling in from Bethel. Here's another perspective. This one from Susan says, I just wanted to add that there is a group in Fairbanks that constructed a co-housing community in Fairbanks a number of years ago, and it's still going strong. For me, I choose Nome, an unintentional community where we all have our differences and conflicts, but ultimately function as a caring and inclusive community.
Well, there is apparently, although I think they've taken themselves off the national website, there was a small co-housing community of only about six units in Fairbanks. I heard that they recently disbanded. And then there's another development that isn't co-housing, but was senior. It was similar. It's a senior community, but it wasn't actually technically co-housing.
Well, Terry, you were telling me that for you, this is an alternative to the roommate situation.
Right.
That's maybe a little too close, and the
right.
Housing is never really appropriate to the... Somebody always gets the crappy room and all that sort of thing.
You've got housemates sharing your kitchen, your living room, having the TV pretty loud when you're trying to go to bed. You know the scene, you know. And then on the flip side of that, if you don't have those housemates, then you're living completely alone, and your neighbors aren't necessarily interested in getting to know anybody. So I found that, you know, one was too close and one was too isolated, and so co-housing is like the Goldilocks idea. It's just right.
I want to get back to the energy thing here because that enters into the expense. I mean, you've got a condo, you've got your association dues, and essentially you're paying off the condo. How is this going to, like, compare to the skyrocketing rents that we have right now in the city of Anchorage for the payments that people are going to have to make?
Well, actually, we've talked with a lot of real estate professionals who say that, number one, there's going to be a big demand for units in our price range. So these are ownership units.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking forward to
So you make your own financing arrangement fundamentally?
Well, there is, once we have a construction loan, a lot of the mortgages will probably be through the same lending lender.
A hybrid.
Yeah, but you can get your mortgage from any place.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, so turning to this energy, $9 gas bill raises a lot of eyebrows, I'm sure, for many listeners here. How about solar?
Yes, what makes solar possible? And we are going to attempt to at least get half our hot water needs met. We're not talking photovoltaics. We're talking flat plate collectors. And we hope to get half of it. So that helps. But what makes it all work is the high R values we have in our walls, the high insulation levels. The walls are R40 and the ceilings are R60, if that means anything to you. But our heat loss is very low. In fact, it turns out that our domestic hot water uses more BTUs than our heat loss does, and which actually helps us in the solar aspect, because the sun does not shine very well in January. when you need our heat, but it does shine quite well right now, for example. And we still need showers in the summer. So you have your hot water needs. If you look at a graph, you'll end up seeing, 80% of your savings will actually occur in the summer. We're looking at providing the heat as a part of the HOA dues. So when your gas bill will simply be averaged out and rolled over into your HOA dues. Partly because we have several different buildings and it's hard to, one unit in the middle, for example, only has two exterior walls, so their heat loss is less than the one on the end, yet it's the same building. So we've sort of averaged it.
Wow. So you've really thought about this.
Oh, yeah.
So as I understand, Raven's Roost is already sort of an organization. This is a bunch of people that already know one another?
Yes. Yeah, we do have an LLC to actually organize the development of the housing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to emphasize, too, usually the biggest fear people have is that they won't have enough privacy before they experience co-housing. But then surveys have shown once people live in co-housing that that's not really a problem for them at all. I found that myself. I lived in two different places for a month each. And in my actual home, no one ever bothered me. If I wanted to go out and be social, I had to kind of go outside, or, I had a few friends who might come knock on my door, but there was really no expectation for me to come out. And some people are afraid that they're going to have to be super socializers, but it's really all optional in terms of, how much you actually want to interact with others. It's an underlying intention. We want to get to know each other. But the surveys of co-housers find that they feel like they have all the privacy they need.
Well, I would think you've got sufficient grounds that a person that wants to go outside and not be social could still go outside
and
not
be definitely.
Social. Yeah. 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering that public transportation can benefit their businesses and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, and social opportunities. There's more information at alaskamobility.org. This message sponsored by the nonprofit organizations Alaska Mobility Coalition and the American Public Transportation Association.
We're talking co-housing. It's an experiment, and people are putting their money into it. They're going out on that limb in Anchorage, Alaska, and as we heard, there's been some of that in Fairbanks, and it's around the country. We have Katie McCammett, the co-author of Creating Co-Housing, Building Sustainable Communities, on the phone, and we're open for business for your phone call. In Anchorage, it's a local number at 550-8422, and I would really encourage any Raven's Roost people who are listening to this program right now and would like to just chime in and with their testimonial, why they wanted to do this, what their vision is, and on like that. We're all relying on Terry Pauls to give us that, and Tom Pierce Bulger, and they're doing a great job. But it might be good to hear, why people, what their motivation really is for doing this. I think one thing that would get me going would be the resilience part of it.
Exactly.
I'm not expecting to have the same type of economy that we've got right now in another 4 or 5 years, and I just assume be someplace where I felt more secure about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other real attraction is the intergenerational neighborhood. And that I know I live in a co-housing community in the Sierra foothills in a small town. And it is, my neighbors range from one-year-old kids to a 94-year-old woman who lives across the walkway. And it's really fun to have people of all different ages around. And, I think, again, sort of reflects back to the way that people used to live all the time in all different cultures with a variety of different ages and people pitching in with helping with the kids and helping with older people. And it's really hard to find today.
Well, Katie, now I'm going to kind of put you on the spot about that, because this just has a feel of a real white person kind of thing. And yet many of our villages are people that are not so white.
Uh-huh.
I'm wondering, how do the people that are not so white fit in with the culture of the co-housing. I'm not saying racist or anything like that, but I'm saying culturally, I'm just wondering how that tends to work out when people that already know what a village is like move into this kind of culture.
Well, of course, you know, I mean, I think it's our native cultures who are the experts on this. And and unfortunately, what's sort of been the model, and, you know, again, goes back 150-plus years, is to take all over the world, people who had strong intergenerational villages have been told by the developing world that what they really want is suburban housing, only to find that, you know, we've been very helpful in helping many cultures destroy their villages. And I think what some of us are now saying is like, wait a minute, maybe that's not what we want. Maybe there's, in fact, a lot to learn from those villages. And on the other hand, I think one of the things that co-housing offers is sort of a contemporary approach in that we are really a global society. People do move much more often and it requires an openness that I think sometimes traditional villages didn't have, an openness to different kinds of people, different orientations, different perspectives. And I think that's one of the things that co-housing communities really try to stay open, to not become a closed society, but to really practice tolerance, encourage a wide variety of perspectives within them.
So among your client base, you haven't really quite answered whether this is just a white people's thing.
It definitely is not just a white people's thing.
Oh, good. Well, that's the answer I wanted.
Yeah. No, definitely not. I would argue that us white people have probably been the worst at destroying our sense of community. Maybe we need it more than most.
Uh-huh.
But no, I don't think that's definitely not.
But it is something that you got to have resources to get into. I mean,
well, again, yeah, a lot of us do have the larger homes. But for myself, I've learned that's not where my happiness comes from.
Right.
You know, if you're honest about it, if you really think about
it. So you're all set. All you have to do is unload the place you're in, and you can just buy into this other place.
Well, you do save money after moving in because, for one thing, transportation. We're close to a bus stop. Again, the carpooling's easier. The child care can be a big savings in cost because there are so many other families who are willing to take care of each other's kids for short periods of time. And then we can also buy food in bulk, and then the garden and so on. We can share the bikes and kayaks we don't quite care as much about.
Mm-hmm.
So it is. And then also you cut down greatly on entertainment cost. You know, some of these folks who want to live downtown in Midtown is so that they can, you know, go out and get their $4.50 espresso and go see a movie at the Beartooth. Well, I love the Beartooth, but you can also save quite a bit of money by having your own talent shows or your own movie night, you know, your own dinner, instead of having to go out and spend all that money on commercial places. With co-housing, you don't really need to go buy that stuff. You can have it right there, you know, for cost on your own grounds.
Some of the stuff that you're now buying, you might find that doesn't need to be so much money involved.
Right.
Okay, what about pets?
Well, we just, we're working on our pet policy. We've just had some meetings about
that.
And we've learned a lot from the other co-housing places, so it's great because we don't have to reinvent the wheel. But basically, we're accepting pets with reasonable responsibilities attached so that no one is impinged upon negatively. So we're working out, you know, how you can both have pets and have pets responsibly.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking, like, we have an easement behind our property. I've got two lots next to one another, and they're in Spinard. And it just happens that the easement's a utility easement. And on the other side of the easement is a little tiny municipal park, one of the smallest ones in the municipality. And so my wife and I got the idea, well, why don't we garden this and make a community garden, show the kids how they can you know, where food comes from, because a lot of them don't really understand that real well. And, you know, so we put some plots out there and planted some stuff and so forth. And it actually is a very, very nice experiment. It's a little labor intensive, and you have to keep going out there and re-educating people and tell, no, this is actually yours. You really can't touch this. And
yeah.
Here's how you touch it and all like that. That part's sort of fun. But what's developed now is that a lot of people are wanting to take their pets in there, into the park, which is a wonderful thing to do, right? But they're saying, well, you need to build a fence around those plots to protect that from those animals. That's sort of like, you know, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, so all that stuff gets worked out.
Yeah.
Speaking of gardens, we do have large open areas currently on the land, and we wanted to invite people to a walk on the land tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. And you can go to the website, again, ravensroostcoho.org for directions.
People that don't know where Abbott is should know it's the same thing as Diamond, really, just the
east.
Other side of the Seward Highway.
Yeah, right by the Abbott Fred Meyers. You just go halfway between that and Elmore Road. And it's on the north side of Abbott, across from Ruth Arcand Park. So Mountain Brook Court is the street that you're looking to park on. That's the north side of our land. And after that, Tom and his wife Marilyn happen to live only about a block away. So we have a number of displays that we're going to have, and they're inviting us over afterwards for some refreshments. And people can come on over and see the displays for all of our plans. They can see who already has dibs on what unit, what unit is still maybe available for them.
What's your vision for, if this were to catch on, what would you like to see erupt in that kind of still developable land around there?
Commercially, you mean? Because residentially,
yeah, yeah. It's sort of like, you know, like our one caller said, this would be great if it was in Spinard.
Well, like I said, it's great if we can have more of the Middleway Cafe type of thing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's a possibility to, in fact, the owner has talked about that area. So we like those commercial things, but we point out that we're in the habit of thinking we have to go out for that because we all live in isolation. But if you live in co-housing, you don't necessarily need as much of it. And we do have that brewery down there, Midnight Sun Brewery, in that area. And we've got, you know, the Fine Dutchman bakery and the Coffee Cats Organic Coffee. We've got Organic Coffee at Coffee Cats. A lot of people don't realize what's on Abbott.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the South Anchorage Farmers Market. So we do have things going on down there already, but we hope to, you know, focus more on what's in the co-housing to enrich the relationships.
Well, I'm going to let Tom have the last. Katie McCammett, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So it's time for the end of the show. You get the last word, Tom Pierce Bulger, the silent one.
You want me to sum it up, huh?
No, you can't. There's not enough time.
There's not enough time.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for
Come
being
join
with
us on the walk tomorrow afternoon.
Tomorrow, 6:30.
Thanks to Josh Edge, Dave Waldron. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The University of Alaska Southeast has web-based bachelor degree programs for first-time and transfer students. Learn online and work closely with advisors and experts in subjects like history, psychology, and anthropology. Cutting-edge technology prepares students for a variety of career paths, including graduate programs in teaching, counseling, and law. For more information, call Gail Klein at 228-4508. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast. How do you get men to wear a life jacket when the fact is that 90% of those who die in boating accidents in Alaska are men? Well, most men won't listen to this message, but they might listen to you. So have them pledge to wear a life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. That's pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back home. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.